This is Mae Brussel. It's tape number 391, side 2, March 23rd, 1979. Some of the other allegations briefly in the book are that a Gerald O'Neill from Princeton University, a professor writing for NASA, is part of this project, and that there were possible plans to kill him when he exposed the population explosion and could be linked to NASA and MIT and that project. This book claims that Gerald O'Neill is one of the writers for NASA and involved in this project. And another allegation is that these space scientists can kill at will anybody they want. I went into that a little bit last week. Anyone who exposes their plans, anybody who's part of the operation, and that they control the news media that covers up the murder, the photographers, and the news media that also cover up the murders. They refer to hot jobs, burning people to death, which, again, there's comparisons here to the Jonestown, and sleep jobs, where they could tell a person when he's asleep to kill himself, and the next day he wakes up and does that. And next week we'll go into Michael Prokes with a possible sleep job where he calls a press conference, walks in the other room, and kills himself. They talk about the news media going along and pretending that these exposés are hoaxes and the covering up of the various deaths, limiting the pictures and the stretchers and so forth. And next week I'll do on the Jonestown some of the comparisons to Alternative 3. And then the book, of course, goes into the brain drain of people being taken from England as part of the special individual groups that will be heading these teams, and they'll be useful for their scientific expertise. And then the book concludes with space guerrillas, which I mentioned last week, who are sabotaging the program and are aware of what is happening and feel that space is a genocidal program, among other things, and that they're currently sabotaging certain efforts to get these satellites launched. Now, these are some of the major allegations of Alternative 3, and I want to mention that half of the credibility, of course, goes into whether this Sir Valentine was murdered in the way that they said. And also they talk about a Bob Groden, a spaceman that they interviewed, who went crazy and has been on tape record on various space programs, and they went to visit him in New England, and then he died in a mental hospital. Well, I thought I would search for Bob Groden, and I looked in the almanac, the World Almanac 1978-79, list the various spacemen, but it does not list a Bob Groden. So is he a project of fiction, or is this book fiction, or is it nonfiction? We really don't know yet. And the interesting thing is that the World Almanac that I have on page 123 and 124 of the 1978 Almanac, talking about memorable space flights, has no mention of Bob Groden. But they list the first Russian manned flight in 1961, and they end with Apollo 18 in 1975. Well, there were more space flights between 1975 and 1979, but they stop there, and nobody is mentioned, and they're not referred to in the almanacs at all. I read in the newspaper about an astronomer who works for NASA. He's now working on projects for NASA. And he was former director of a space science center at a university. And I called him on the telephone this week and asked him if he knew of an astronaut named Bob Groden. And he said, yes, he knows of Bob Groden. He had heard of him. And I said, where can I get information? And he told me to call NASA Library, the Ames Research Center up in Palo Alto. And he gave me the phone number. I asked him if he ever heard of buildings that were up there before we got to the moon. And he said, yes, he's heard of those. I said, have you ever heard of space colonies where people are on the job working now that they project in the future that are taking place? He said, yes, there's been on-job conversations about it. I said, have you heard about the book Alternative 3? He said, I've heard about it, but it's not allowed in the United States. I can't get it, and I get calls, but it's not allowed in the United States. So I called the Ames Research, and I'm giving you the phone number here of the library in case you want to ask them about Grodin. The woman was very angry. She said, why are you calling? What do you want to know? We're very busy. We haven't got time for you. Give us your name and your telephone number. And she was very hostile. So I'm going to give you the phone number and let some of you listeners call there and see what you can find out if there was an astronaut by the name Bob Grodin. And if so, why is his name deleted from all later references or all information that's come out? And if he didn't exist, then we'll have to pursue this and go to England and find out on what basis they interviewed him and if this book is fiction or half fiction and half truth. We do know that California is filled with politicians that are gung-ho for the space satellite system, and the man spearheading it is Timothy Leary, who's on television and various lecture places telling you of the wonderful space satellites where you can live in colonies and have your own colony of either smokers or non-smokers or blacks or vegetarians. And he sells it like a Disneyland paradise where everyone is with his own kind, never knowing that, say, Mae Brussel may be very close friends with three smokers and three non-smokers, and I wouldn't like to be separated by being forced to choose which satellite station I go to. We know that Stuart Brandt, who got out the Whole Earth Catalog, works with Stanford Research, has worked with NASA ever since he moved to California. He's the man who stressed, do your own thing, don't be political, do your macrame, make your bread, do your backpacking, just don't think about world problems. And he is hired by Jerry Brown, who's very much in favor of being the first state to use satellites for major communications. Jerry Brown is satellite and space-oriented and works with Stuart Brandt and that faction and is pushing these space stations as the future of America. Our great future is in the space program. Looking at the news differently just this week, I want to go over with you just five or six articles on space that were in the news this week. March the 20th, there's an article, NASA Wants Men for a Week in Bed, and it says that the Ames Research is looking for men to volunteer to stay in bed for a week in advance of their space science project, which they're working with the Russians. Now, this is the allegation in the book that the United States and Russia are doing all of this together to rid the Earth of these literally billions too many people. This article says the international test will be a series, but with the Soviet counterparts working with the United States, American and Russian space experts are working on similar grounds for space shuttle flights, and they've asked 10 volunteers who'll be paid $2,000 to stay in bed for 1 week, and then they'll spend 5 weeks for tests and then studied intensively for 7 weeks, extended bed rest. And they said the Russians are doing an extended project and there will be a joint study program. So this is an article in the paper this week about joint Russian-American space programs. Another article, a long series of articles on the space shuttle trip, that controversial space shuttle that was built, sent out by Edwards Air Force Base, built by Rockwell International. It's described as the Columbia, a mammoth space shuttle. It goes 17,500 miles an hour, built by Rockwell. It is 5 stories tall, 142 feet wide, and it will carry out its mission back and forth for flights, can make 100 round-trip flights back and forth. It's scheduled to go up November the 9th, and it is the first of 4 shuttles approved by Congress, which means that if there's 4 more, that's 400 trips back and forth to space. This Columbia will do weather forecasting. It will check weather resources survey and military reconnaissance. Now, those are just 3 of the stated purposes of these satellites: weather forecasting, Earth resources, and military reconnaissance. And also they can repair other satellites which are in space and bring them back. Right now the spaceship is sitting in limbo, which may be part of that end of the story. It says that there's a shuttle program, a program to sabotage the ships. And just yesterday there was an article that soggy weather is grounding the space shuttle program, that in El Paso, Texas, the Columbia is sitting there because of bad weather. It's hard to believe that a little storm would hold up a space shuttle that's going to be traveling 17,500 miles down and back up around space, that all these delays are due to the skin, the little pieces of tile coming off, and the weather. They're having trouble with a spaceship, and that may be part of what the book was talking about, the intentional sabotage of some of the program. We don't know or not, but it's interesting that they are having trouble with all of their recent shuttles and ships, and this one is being held up for a variety of reasons. Page 10 of Alternative 3 has a quotation I gave you last week of Gerard O'Neill, a Princeton professor working for NASA. And just coincidentally, the Washington Post had an article that came out March the 5th by Gerard K. O'Neill. And it's an article on making the skies really safe. And it's an article about federal aviation in September of 78 and the mid-air collision crash in San Diego. It's interesting that the Gerard O'Neill that becomes the authority on the FAA tragedy and the problems in San Diego is writing about that aircraft collision, because that collision, I claim, was the one that Lieutenant Governor Merv Dimerly was supposed to be on and could have been a counterintelligence sabotage. He switched planes on Sunday and didn't come in Monday morning. And it's interesting that the plane that I thought was sabotaged just prior to the elections in California is the one that Gerard O'Neill is writing about. Washington Post describes him as a professor of physics at Princeton and an instrument-rated pilot. But, of course, they don't go into his MIT or NASA connections. But he is a spokesman for the air business, and he's a writer, writes for the Washington Post. And I never was aware of his name as a writer until this book came out. And I see the news a little differently now, and we'll have to watch the other things that he writes about space. UFO Magazine, February 79, sent to me regularly by a very loyal listener to these tapes, has an article, The Inside Story of the Australian Airplane Abduction, October 21st, 1978. The Australian pilot that saw a UFO, and there was no trace of him, he announced that there was this UFO next to him, a very well-trained pilot in Australia, and he disappeared. And this article just came to me last week at a time where I was reading about disappearing people and addresses in Australia, people sent from England, and how the scientists, once they get to that point, are disappearing and being used for other purposes. And this was an accomplished pilot who could handle his aircraft and wasn't doing tricks. And it has a copy in this article of his conversations just before he left. And they sent out ships and airplanes right away to where he was, and there's not a trace of him since October 21st, 1978, with the recording that the spaceships were right close next to him. March 9th, 1979, was the article on the space shuttle, which gave the intent of these space shuttles, I mentioned before, weather, resources, and military reconnaissance. And March 15th, 6 days later, was an article in the Los Angeles Times that the Soviet Union and the Third World want to stop these photographs that the United States is sending up in the satellites and these programs that were escalating. And the reasons they give are the exact reasons that these satellites are being launched. Specifically, they said they want to curb the pictures that these satellites are taking, because in the first place they show where mineral deposits are, which I've said all along, the space satellites are the new pirates of the air, because they can photograph where minerals are and overthrow countries. They can photograph bauxite in Guyana and put a prime minister in there that they can trust, and then in exchange for using that as an experimentation center, give him the money, Mr. Burnham, to develop his bauxite mines and so forth. They show mineral deposits. This article said that these show military installations that the Russians can now give to China. The Russians say that the United States can give to China pictures of their prison camps and their military installations by going up there, that they can estimate harvests, that they can find ore, they can find oil. They can warn of potential disasters. They can know of droughts. And there's a argument put up by the Soviet Union and Third World nations, which I believe is long, long overdue. I don't know why it took to 1979 to figure out that industrialized countries, according to this article, have permanent sovereignty over all natural resources. A handful of industrialized countries that own the satellites, of course, own these natural resources, and that less developed nations no longer have control over their natural resources. Now, this was obvious when I read Project Paperclip in 1971, if not before. It was all spelled out how to rule the world and why the Nazis were brought to this country, and some brought to Russia and some brought to this country. But the Soviet Union feels that the less developed nations no longer have control over natural resources. And the article says that they can estimate the harvest, they can rig the world markets, and they can buy leases at cheap rates where the minerals are in those regions, and that the United States, by having this information and not sharing it, can make their moves according to what these pictures show and buy up land. Now, I believe that this has gone on for a long time. If there's rich land in Montana or a mine in California, they push a person off, buy a lease, or take it from him. I think of one particular man that was put in San Quentin on a phony murder charge. He actually defended himself, but I don't want to sidetrack too much. Take over the land because it's rich in mineral deposits, and by getting these satellites up, they can give out military installations, they can cause droughts, they can starve off people, and estimate where harvests are and how to play games in finding ore, oil, mineral, food, and so forth, and that the third world and the less industrialized nations are literally now bought up and caught up. And all of a sudden in the Los Angeles Times, there's an article that they want curbs on these photos that actually now can control the world. Another space article, March the 11th, 1979. All of these I'm citing are just looking at the news differently since I got the book Alternative 3. It's an article by Henry Fairley, Washington Post, on the exploration of space in search for ourselves. Now, this article goes on that for the first time since the landing of the moon, the exploration is so important, having this rendezvous with Jupiter, and it goes on that we have to be thinking in terms of space as our future and our energy, that it may bore us, it said, but we have to pursue it. We have to turn from, we've been turning away from outer space to inner space, but there's a full three-quarters of a page story in Washington Post on the wonders of NASA and how we have to keep thinking in the future, and it says our nature needs this exploration. Out there we may find not only the humility, but the majesty we need in space, projecting that this is a very exciting, wonderful thing, yet not telling you that the very corporations and the manipulations of the people behind the space project have been linked with the most diabolical plans that man has ever conceived, and prove their expertise at the rocket factories with slave labor and at the farming factories with people worked without food till they died and brought in new teams, that these people are glorifying the use of space and pushing it at a time to further your imagination without any concrete proof that you can benefit from these experiments at all. This is a three-quarter page in the Washington Post glorifying the wonders of space. Now we get to a full-page ad, March the 8th, 1979, the New York Times. Your spaceship, it's on its way. This is just a whole page, D3, if you want to go to your library and copy it. Mission, a better world. This weekend, the space shuttle Orbiter Columbia will be transported to the Space Center in Florida. It will make 100 missions. It will work like a space station and return to the Earth like an airplane, ready for more flights. This is a full page, as if they needed a full page ad to sell this. It says the Columbia and three other space orbiters will change man's entire approach to the use of space. There will be onboard laboratories, engineers, and scientists in research and development activities. I can't wonder if these laboratories and engineers and scientists aren't part of that brain drain that is disappearing that they're using for these projects. It said it will result in a variety of benefits from all of us, from knowing zero gravity to the unique experiment to create new products and services for use on Earth. There will be large and small satellites, weather prediction. It will revolutionize communication throughout the world, and they will beam electricity by microwave to energy-hungry world. Remember, the microwave can also scorch the earth. I always believe that Nigeria, with its green belt, there was a Frenchman there with water and grass while the drought was going on all around him. You can starve out millions of people at one time with that same microwave and burn them. And they're going to revolutionize communication. We already have the Associated Press, United Press, Reuters, American Broadcasting, ABC, NBC, CBS, all using the same shtick, the same lies. And imagine instant satellite communication between 12 Howard Hughes hospitals, or South Africa buying a newspaper in a newspaper up in Sacramento, and various radio stations being bought, FM radio stations by Westinghouse. That's why these tapes are so important for people in the little small way that we're doing to keep copying and sending out to other people, because our means of communications is going to be cut off and everything is going to come or could come from one major satellite. Our spaceship is on its way, mission, a better world, and yet Rockwell International can't tell us one way to make a better world. They pollute. They have cost overruns. They put nothing back into the system in terms of education, health, medical care, housing, productivity, fair employment, and they're going to make a better world, and they're not going to tell you how, but they'll have communications, microwave, et cetera, et cetera. They say put energy for a hungry world where they could be doing soybeans and food now and feeding everybody on planet Earth if they really wanted to. Why should they have these contracts and money to make a promise when they've proven here that they can't do a thing for the mass of humanity that is starving and needs it right now? And along these lines of Alternative 3 and this barrage of selling you the space, I'm going to bring up a subject in an article which was in Harper's Magazine, January of 79, which you might have missed, and somebody gave to me, by Michael Harrington, called Corporate Socialism in the Magic Kingdom. And this has to do with Disneyland, of all places, and you may think it's far off from political assassinations and expertise, but I'm going to bring out certain points of this article and ask them you to apply them to the principal Alternative 3 that we've barely touched upon, and I'll be doing more in recent articles and programs of the Space Center. This article goes into the Magic Kingdom of Disneyland, the one in Florida and California, which is an escapist land run on computers. I'm reading you certain sentences from this article. That it is programmed according to the sophisticated calculus of profit, that it is total control of a physical and human environment, that Disneyland is 43 square miles, which is twice the area of Manhattan, and that they have something going now called EPCOT. At their board meetings, they talk about EPCOT, which is the Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow, which is put together by General Motors and Exxon and the corporations working with Disneyland, the same people that acquire the huge profits that funded Adolf Hitler, have worked very closely with the Disney Corporation. This article says that they want a world that is apolitical, anti-intellectual, corporate, technocratic, that has technocratic solutions to the problems of society. It goes into the politics of Walt Disney, his Goldwater affiliations in 1964, how he opened Disneyland. Think in the politics of Disneyland, how Ron Ziegler, press secretary for Richard Nixon, worked as closely associated with Disneyland. Emily Harris of the SLA was down there associated with the Disneyland group two summers or one summer, but had affiliations with them. J. Walter Thompson, the office that was represented by Mullen Associates and the CIA and the Mormon Church represent Disneyland. And Jack Rather, who's an official of the Disneyland organization, is named in that Washington Post article I cited the week before or 2 weeks ago on the tapes as one of the men Richard Nixon used, along with Reader's Digest, for control of public broadcasting, and Jack Rather. We could go into the politics of Disneyland at length at another time, but this article says that this Disneyland is a experimental community control for tomorrow, and it's run by the same kind of people, no interference from politicians. Their total environment, similar to what a space station would be, is controlled. They control what you eat, your hair. There's a predominance of blue-eyed blondes. They wear uniforms, and it is the prototype community of tomorrow. That is their goal, that they have a planned, controlled community, a showcase for American industry, and they pride themselves like there's no crime, there's no slums. They have a community which they call a town and a town park, but there's no people that live there. There's a computer that speaks to you, a president of the United States that gets up, that is a computer, computerized public officials, and it's a company state that it could be a prototype of tomorrow, and they talk about it as a prototype of tomorrow. This article goes into the annual reports of the Walter Elias Disney Enterprises, and they talk about a master plan number 5, their EPCOT, their experimental control of tomorrow, and breakthroughs, studies and breakthroughs and experiments. And this author says that the minutes of their business meeting sound like a strange Lovian war room ready for World War III. It tells about the corporation finance and their communication center, that they have what they call a communicore. And they'll have people there, examples of technology where you sit there and choose travels or choose where you want to go. And there's casinos of information that you press dials. And that Exxon helps them with their problems and General Motors helps them with their problems. And that they refer to Spaceship Earth as their major theme show that they work. And it goes on to say that the corporations dominate this Spaceship Earth at the Disneylands, that they're environmentalists who are selling you tomorrow, but who are polluting the earth today. The very corporations who are turning down safety regulations in their own corporations and so forth, that are threatening our earth system here on earth, are glorifying their ideas and ideology about Spaceship Earth. And it goes into the contradiction of how can these corporations, who are doing all the damaging, promise you this utopia tomorrow, which is what you're supposed to get there, is the idea that there are communities can live in peace. And it goes into the Ford Foundation helping them and with their urban planning and huge parks with tunnels underneath, written up as Alternative 2 in the book Alternative 3, utility lines and repairs and connectors and a whole underworld that transpires under Disneyland. This article about Disneyland goes into communications, and the very people who are profit maximizers, it says, they present themselves as our problem solvers. Now, this is the same thing that's happening with these Nazis from Germany that came into the space program, to the corporations that are pushing the space program, that are telling us the glories of the existence out there and the anticipation of young people to go there. The very profit maximizers are coming on as your problem solvers for the future. And what gives them the right, this full-page ad in the New York Times, we'll give you a better world, we'll give you for an energy-hungry world, microwaves for your energy, and we'll revolutionize your communications, where they own radio stations and the news media, and we can't get communications out without fighting and beating every door. We can't get facts out now. This article goes into their solutions, which are highly controversial and represent only their self-interest, that Disneyland is the epitome of a place run in a controlled environment to make everybody look happy. The article goes into the mechanical dolls of the small, small world, where you get blacks and whites and little Israeli dolls and Arab dolls, and everybody is singing and dancing, and you leave and you have a wonderful time. But it says the environment is a place for business technologists. And I wonder if Alternative 3 is even half true, if it can be sold and packaged by J. Walter Thompson and the advertising agencies that were behind the White House and the promotional experts that are behind space to sell you something that's as much fun as Disneyland. Go there and get your kicks watching these mechanical dolls and think that the world is all clean and beautiful, and that space stations will be similar to Disneyland and all your problems will be solved. The article concludes by saying that Disneyland is as fraudulent as the moon shot, that there are no people on the moon. It says it's an engineering problem and there are really no people in the park. There are only corporate guards. It is a prototypical community of tomorrow. It's sold, but there is no community at all. It's corporations. It's fraudulent, and the article says that their 19th century Main Street is a fraud, and their 20th century version of the future is a fraud. And as I say, their president and their leaders are all computerized. Their heroes there, you sit in a chair and the lights go out, and they're computerized leaders of the future or of our past. There's a quotation in this article of General Motors, a person from General Motors, who they referred to the experimental prototype community of tomorrow that they've set up in Disneyland, said, "It's one of the best investments we make. It shows how technological progress contributes to free enterprise." And then the article says that there is no such thing as free enterprise. There, they make your decisions for you. Competition is banned. It's monopolistic. It's a false utopia with fraudulent exhibits. And I think that is something to consider in terms of rereading the news and the space shuttles and the glorification and the budget of billions and billions of dollars to put those great satellites there, where the United States government is even trying to solve the problems on planet Earth, and this is pretty obvious. Well, so much for Alternative 3. I'll try to find where we can get some copies for you. This is Mae Brussel, and I'll be back with you next week to share some information, hopefully, on Jonestown. Thank you.